is America with Rich Valdez, powered by PolitiWeek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You work for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation.
The nation.
This is America with your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, your liberty-loving Latino amigo, 17 blocks away from Madison Square Garden right here in New York City. And they try to set up Trump again. Zuckerberg is now a king of his own country, and some crazy stuff went down at the Grammys. But first, oftentimes, I feel that for the left, politics is the art of surrender. It's kind of like permission-based fascism, if you will. They want to control you, but they're going to try and trick you every step of the way to, until you say yes. You know, it's kind of like when you convince your children to do something and you're like, yeah, come on. You want to lay down and go to sleep. And they're like, no, I don't. And you're like, yes, you do. Look at this. Look at the blankie. Look at the little stuffed animal. That's what they kind of do to us. Right. They try. They sit there and they're like, oh, we're not going to come and storm your door down and force you to do what we want. We'll just scare the crap out of you through demagoguery and say it's in the name of the virus or the name of this or the name of that or the evil white supremacist Republicans or this or whatever it is and scare you into submission. And before you know it, you'll be begging us to do, to do our bidding. And I believe that's that permission based fascism that I'm talking about. And this is why the media is so heavy handed. Because they constantly want to fearmonger, right? So a couple months ago, the big fake story of the day was that President Trump had called Secretary Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, saying, you know, you're going to have to find the fraud, and that he'd spoken with an investigator as well, and that the audio recording of the investigator was nowhere to be found. Well, lo and behold, last night I was in the control room around 7 o'clock at night, and I see in my email a statement from President Trump. And former President Trump said that the Washington Post now admitted misquoting of his December phone call with Georgia elections investigator was a media travesty. Now, of course, the media travesty he's talking about was that a Georgia state elections investigator said something about him calling them and threatening him. And, you know, with Trump saying, listen, you better find the fraud and blah, blah, blah. And we will hear it in a second. But I wanted to set the stage. And what we're going to do is Trump, he's putting it out there that they had to correct the record. The Washington Post corrected the record saying, oh, snap, we were wrong. Everybody reported the same thing because everybody confirmed that a phone call had occurred. But with that phone call occurring, it didn't occur the way that they said they did. Matter of fact, the investigator trashed the actual call in their trash bin. And that's where it was found, in their trash bin, only after they claimed that they didn't have it anymore. So I want you to listen to the actual statement. Go ahead.
A lot of people aren't going out to vote. And a lot of Republicans are going to vote negative because they hate what you did to the president. Okay? They hate it. And they're going to vote. And if you would be respected, if really respected, if this thing could be straightened out before the election. You have a big election coming up on Tuesday.
So now we know that President Trump spoke with Secretary Raffensperger. We also know that he spoke with this investigator. And this investigator apparently did not tell the truth. And this is a lot worse than we think. And in a minute, I'm going to share some details with you from a piece in a article written in PJ Media by Matt Margolis. But the big piece here is that Trump's emailed statement says, I thank the Washington Post for the correction. Because when he was then president, this post-election call with the election investigator was widely described as evidence that he pressured state officials to dishonestly subvert President Biden's victory and the will of the voters. But the Washington Post correction, after the audio file was discovered in a state election official's trash folder, undermined the seemingly mostly damning quotes that had been attributed to him. You will notice that the establishment media errors, omissions, mistakes, and outright lies always slant one way, against me and against Republicans, the president said, President Trump. Meanwhile, stories that hurt Democrats, I should be doing this in my Trump voice, right? Meanwhile, the stories that hurt the Democrats or undermine their narratives are buried, ignored, or delayed until they can do the least harm. For example, I can't do it for that long. After it's over.
Look no further than the negative coverage of the vaccine that preceded the election and the overdue celebration of the vaccine once the election had concluded. A strong democracy requires fair and honest media. The latest media travesty underscores that legacy press outlets should be regarded as political entities, not as journalistic enterprises. Excellent quote, Mr. President. I agree with that. And of course, the correction substantially altered the reporting on the phone call, which was politically explosive at the time, you know, making it look like Trump was trying to force elections officials to change the election in his favor, which it's now clear that it hasn't. And the Washington Post has issued their correction. Now to the piece in PJ Media, because this is where it gets down to the nitty gritty. Matt Margolis, he's the author of Airborne, How the Liberal Media Weaponized the Coronavirus Against Donald Trump. And you could find that wherever they sell books. Excellent piece, both the piece in the New York Post and the piece in PJ Media. You can follow Matt on Twitter, Gab, Facebook, MeWe, Heroes Rumble, and Cloud Hub. So here to help us explain everything from soup to nuts is Matt Margolis. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You got it, brother. So I was looking at this before, and I shared a little bit of the article with the audience, and I thought to myself, I should probably try to reach out to Matt and see if we can get him on, literally the guy who wrote the book on it. So, Matt, walk us through this. I guess take us back to when this originally went down with President Trump and how they started to create this misstatement and how everybody created these false confirmed statements and all of that.
Well, basically what happened is back in January, the Washington Post published a story that essentially accused President Trump of trying to pressure Georgia election officials to find the fraud and telling them that they'd be national heroes if they were able to overturn the results, and really kind of created this narrative that he was trying to get them to do bad things in order to change the results. And even in the headline said that experts say this could amount to obstruction. And they cited quotes that were allegedly given by Trump in this phone call that we now know to be completely false. And there's so much that leads up to this that just makes this very bizarre, because, you know, they had said that there wasn't a recording of the call, and now we know that there was. And this recording was actually found in the trash folder of the investigator's computer. This is just an amazing story that hopefully is not going to just be brushed away in the coming days. This is very, very big and a major black stain on the mainstream media, because the mainstream media repeated these allegations and then claimed to independently confirm it. So this is a huge story.
And we're on with Matt Margolis. He's an author and he's a writer at PJ Media. Matt, how did they stumble upon this stuff that was in the trash bin? Did somebody just say, oh, let me check out so-and-so's trash bin? What was going on?
Basically, what happened was is that there was an investigation going on. There was a public records request. And so someone was looking on these devices, and that's how it was found. So if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't even know about this. And this story would still be talked about as if it were true. And Trump actually said those words.
Now, to your knowledge,
we got pretty lucky.
Yeah. And to your knowledge, was this public records request part of what happened with that per se, or was it a public records request for something else where they just happened to stumble on this?
As far as I know, it's related to this, but the story isn't clear, and I haven't heard any more details on that specifically.
Now, something that you mentioned in the piece that I thought was really good, and I'll quote it to you, says, unless, of course, none of these five outlets, and of course, you're talking about the outlets that reported this as confirmed, this phone call, and you say, unless none of these five outlets actually confirmed anything but merely claimed so, this is possible, but considering the fact that the recording of the call was found in the trash folder of a Georgia state official's computer seems to suggest that one or more Georgia state officials conspired to come up with a damaging version of the phone call, leak the phony details to the media, and then cover up the evidence of the actual call. Now, that appears to be true to me, but help us unpack that.
I mean, that's the only conclusion that I can come up with. But at the same time, you know, I don't think that absolves the media for what they did.
Of course.
But clearly there were some anti-Trumpers in Georgia who were trying to damage him. And you remember this story came out not long after the Capitol riot. And this all was included as part of the narrative that led to Trump's second impeachment. You know, he's pressuring officials to overturn results, and this whole thing just kind of snowballed from all these fake stories. And the big question that this leads us to ask is, the Washington Post and these other outlets referred to anonymous sources.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can we trust anonymous sources anymore if you can just make up things and not be held accountable for it? I mean, these are people who should be held accountable for saying false things to the media and then letting it go rampant.
And I think this is a point that I make regularly, is that I think many of them feel that's their job. Their job is to just promote these false things or do whatever you got to do to stop the other side. It's not about journalism. It's not about accountability or being a watchdog or any of that. It's about stopping the other side.
It's definitely their job to do those things during Trump, because they definitely were not doing that during the 8 years of Obama. And they're not exactly doing that right now with Biden.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit because I think it's a great piece and I want you guys to check it out. The Washington Post's fake Trump scandal is worse, a lot worse than you think, by Matt Margolis in pjmedia.com. But I also want you to take a moment and tell us a little bit about your most recent book, Airborne, which I actually have a copy of on my desk in the Levin studio. And it says, How the Liberal Media Weaponized the Coronavirus Against Donald Trump. So tell us a little bit about the book, because you did a deep dive there, and I think the people deserve to know.
Yeah, well, that was a book that I honestly did not want to write. It was, but it got very frustrating last year when the pandemic started. And as I'm sure you probably noticed, too, there was all these negative stories that would come out about Trump, and then a day or two later, oh, that's not true. Mm-hmm. You know, here's some new information, or no, that's not really what happened. And I felt it was important to document the fake stories that the media just went all over Trump for, to try to pin the pandemic on him, which they largely succeeded in doing. His approval ratings on the pandemic originally were very strong. Then all of a sudden they started to take a dive, and that was because of this endless media coverage that that he had failed to protect this country. It was just lie after lie after lie, and that's what the book gets into.
Yeah, and separate from that, but along the same vein, I remember when they were saying, oh, he said bad things about the soldiers, he disrespected the soldiers. I mean, they just created, you're right, one fake story after another. And afterwards, it was okay to say, oh, yeah, my bad, I guess we didn't get that one right. Or they wouldn't say anything at all. And so I think it's impressive that the Washington Post has kind of stepped up and said, yep, we lied to you yet again, but this time they're admitting to it. But tell me, in your estimation, as somebody that's out there in the media writing and, covering all of the news of the day, tell us what type of damage do you think this does to A, the media, B, the country as a whole, when journalists or pseudo-journalists decide to prostitute themselves as propagandists?
Well, I think the damage is quite clear, and Trump has said so many times that if the media was fair and treated him like Democrat presidents, or at least, as I said, in a fair way, he would have won the election in a landslide. But of course they don't. They come up with these fake stories back to back and just hope that everything will stick. I mean, there's fake stories that have long been debunked that the left still believe. Did they still believe that Trump called the pandemic a hoax when he said no such thing? There's actually video of him saying that the witch hunt was the real hoax with mm-hmm. the pandemic, not the actual coronavirus. It wasn't, but people still believe it. People believe stories that have been.
Yeah, he said the Mexicans were rapists, right?
Right, and exactly, or the whole thing with in Charlottesville, right. Good people on all sides. That lie. People believe these fake stories because they were reported on as 100% true, and then later debunked. But the people who want to believe it will still believe it and pretend that it was never debunked.
Yeah, and honestly, there's still people that actually believe it because they heard it so many times, And they just believe the rest of it is just, you know, somebody trying to save him, one of his friends coming to his rescue, that, you know, trying to cover up for him, but that he actually did these things. I guess my last question, Matt, just because you've got your ear to the ground, and one of the stories that none of us can escape, and I don't mean to put you on the spot because I haven't seen any of your work on this, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts, is what do you think happens with Essential Andy Cuomo from the Essential Andy Cuomo podcast here in New York? Do you think the governor gets the boot? Does he walk away? I think nothing happens. I think he doesn't get impeached. He doesn't walk away. Maybe he decides not to run for reelection. Maybe.
You know, he's definitely said multiple times that he is not going to resign. It is clearly not in his character to do that. I think he is counting on impeachment to fail or not even perhaps not even go forward. So, but I think he's hoping that that'll happen, and he'll probably see the writing on the wall and just not run for reelection.
Yeah, I think you're right. And again, folks, that's Matt Margolis. He's the author of Airborne, How the Liberal Media Weaponized the Coronavirus Against Donald Trump, and the best-selling book, The Worst President in History, The Legacy of Barack Obama. You can follow him at Twitter, Gab, Facebook, MeWe, Heroes, Rumble, and Clout Hub. Matt, I want to thank you for joining us in a pinch. It was great to hear your insight and analysis on this.
Well, thanks for having me.
You got it. Keep it locked right there. I'm Rich Valdez.
This is America.
What's up, America? Welcome back. Big tech CEOs are earning a lot of money lately. It seems their wealth has boomed during the pandemic, up by over $30 billion. The pandemic has been a blessing for big tech billionaires, with the CEOs of companies such as Tesla and Amazon and Google and Facebook increasing their personal wealth by tens of billions each in the past year. Many of the United States' wealthiest individuals are tech barons, showing the strength and dominance of an industry that's grown substantially despite the coronavirus-induced pandemic. And of course, that's because people are stuck at home, glued to their devices, and this is what they're doing. They're just, you know, skimming this and sliding their finger there and scrolling here, and they're all over the place. Now, these respective CEOs, Elon Musk of Tesla, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and seven other tech titans, made more than $380 billion from last February to this February. And that's according to an analysis in Bloomberg's Billionaires Index by the Washington Examiner. Now, I look at this and I think, God bless them, good for them. I've never been mad at anybody for making money or becoming a billionaire, because, man, I'm on the waiting list, right? I'm waiting my turn. But one thing I'll tell you is that some of Jeff Zuckerberg's own people, they're not necessarily as on board with him being successful as maybe I am. Now, listen, I'm not saying I'm a fan of Facebook's messed up algorithms that push out conservatives and the way that they data mine us, and they make us feel like I get to talk to my friend in California and watch his kids grow up. So I kind of like Facebook, when in reality, they're doing everything they can to stop what it is that I believe in ideologically and politically, to slow it down and stifle that. They're both true. But Zuckerberg has faced some opposition, and it's coming from within. His global planning lead, Benny Thompson, was caught on undercover video or leaked video. And we have Project Veritas to thank for that. Now, of course, Project Veritas is the 501c3 nonprofit guerrilla filmmaking and citizen journalism educational nonprofit based out of New York, which I happen to have worked for, and ran their national field operation 2014, 2015. And James O'Keefe, the president, who is somebody I consider a friend, and I think he's a patriot and does a great job, has really been intrepid in reaching these people and in being, I'm going to say, courageous and bold in helping them put their stories out. When these whistleblowers come forward from inside Facebook, from inside Twitter, from inside a lot of different places, UPS, the United States Postal Service as well, all of these different entities, people have come forward and said, you know what? I have a story to tell. And he's given them that platform and put his name on the line to give them that reach because it's important. So I want you to hear a little bit from Benny Thompson, the global planning lead at Facebook, because he feels that Mark Zuckerberg has control over way too many people. Check this out.
I mean, no king in the history of the world has been the ruler of 2 billion people. But Mark Zuckerberg is. And he's 36. Like, that's too much for a 36-year-old. Like, you should not be... You should not have power over 2 billion people. I just think that's wrong.
So he says, no king in the history of the world has had reign over 2 billion people, and he's only 36. 36 is too young. I would say, Mr. Thompson, 46, 56, 96, 106. I don't want a king. This world does not need a king. 2 billion people don't need a king. And the whole idea is kind of bizarre, honestly, when you think of this guy makes his living. He probably makes a good living as the global planning lead. It sounds pretty important, right? Unless they give him out, you know. They give out the big titles and they don't pay them. They're like, hey, here's 20 grand a year. You're going to be our new director of strategic global planning leadery. I don't know. You know, one of those things. His own people feel he's got too much power to the point where they're calling him a king instead of calling Cuomo a king. This is a big deal. But that's not all Mr. Thompson had to say. He had more. Listen to this.
Facebook and Google are no longer companies. They're countries. They must be stopped.
So that's Mr. Thompson. Now, we have another audio clip from the other gentleman. His name, Nick Clegg, is the global affairs head for FB, Facebook. Listen to Nick Clegg.
But there has been quite a lot of disquiet expressed by many leaders around the world, from the president of Mexico to Alexander Navalny in Russia and Chancellor Angela Merkel, and others saying, well, this shows that private companies have got too much power and they should be only making these decisions in a way that is framed by democratically agreed rules. We agree with that.
All right. So, again, equally as damaging now, because Nick agrees Facebook has too much power over democratic countries, meaning not Democrat Party, meaning countries that elect people on their own, you know, show of hands, say aye type of thing, Democrat, Democratic. And I agree with that. When you have the ability to interfere because you've kind of woven yourself to everybody's lives in different ways, this power must be checked because it was never power that was given to you by the body politic. Now, Facebook could turn around and say, sure, they did. Every time they clicked those terms and conditions and said, I accept, I approve, check mark, yes, I am part of the body politic, and yes, I am allowing Facebook to do that. One could make that case, but you could also make the case that Facebook doesn't provide representation in the government. So without that representation in the government, you can turn to your representative and say, hey, look, I think that this has gone too far. I think these people are bordering on violations of antitrust, and they have to be stopped. They're just too big, and you got to split them up. In fact, this is what Benny Thomas now says, that Zuckerberg should be removed and that all the Facebook companies should be separated because they've amassed way too much power. Check this out.
Instagram, Facebook, Messenger, Oculus, WhatsApp, they all need to be separate companies. It's too much power when they're all one together. I would break it up and I would remove Zuck as the CEO.
I would remove Zuck as the CEO. Now, I'm not making fun of him. I happen to love the East Asian people. I grew up with a friend that was born in Nigeria, but he was from Indian ancestry. His parents, his dad was born in Pakistan, Indian, born in Pakistan. His mom was born in Vietnam, Indian, born in Vietnam. And they all lived in London and Nigeria, which is such an international group of people. But they had such great accents. I grew up, you know, speaking to them in their own accent because I thought it was great. They'd say, hello, Richie, how are you? Oh, hello, Hiru, hello, Hiru. And nobody took it offensively because I really just enjoyed their accent. So I don't want the media police coming and saying, Valdez mocks South Asians' accent. No, not at all. It's really an appreciation for it. And if you've listened to the show at any length, at some point or another, I'm always doing some impression of something. But I go on. Benny Thomas says that Facebook and Google are no longer companies. They are countries, and that these countries have to be stopped. Check this.
Facebook and Google are no longer companies. They're countries. They must be stopped.
Holy cow. So this is like Phil Rizzuto. Holy cow. That's a huge statement. Now, this guy, again, I don't know who he is. I don't know him from anything. I know he's the planning lead, and we've already established our supposition is that that's probably an important job somewhere, a job he likely doesn't have anymore, or he won't have for too long until they fire him. And they may not fire him right away because they don't want to get sued right away. But whatever it is, the cat's out of the bag. Top dogs are at least people with some considerable influence. And he didn't sound stupid. He sounded like he presented himself like an intelligent person. The people in the organization that way, at that level, are saying, look, this is just too much power, man. There are people out there trying to vote. And you're in their face. You're in their inbox. You're in their messenger. You're in the Instagram. You're in their WhatsApp. You're in everything, telling them how and who to vote for, what issues matter, what issues don't, and quite likely spreading fake news about Trump's phone call that was fake. Yet we know that it wasn't fake. And now the WAPO themselves, Washington Post, is like, oh, my bad. Yo, my bad. I have to say, I'm sorry. I love when the truth comes out because ultimately people are set free. And I don't mean to get whimsical or biblical, but I love it that they tried to ridicule Trump. They tried to demonize him. And it's not because of my fanaticism for Trump. It's because I've always saw what Trump stood for to be right and true, or in Puerto Rico, as they say, right true. So in that being right and true, I love that that vindication is there, just like Mr. Thomas. I mean, who was it that was leading the charge? Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Matt Gaetz, so many others saying big tech companies are too big. They're going to hurt America. It's too much. Now you have people in there saying we are a country. And that's just too much. So don't move a muscle. We're not done just yet. Keep it locked right there. I am Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.
He's making podcasting great again. This is America with Rich Valdez.
Bienvenido, America. Welcome back. The Grammys happened this week, and it was a fiasco like it usually is, but a little more so than usual. This time, it was one of those things that even I, a bachelor, couldn't just say, girls will be girls. And the Grammy Awards is typically something that I like. I used to sit on the committee for the Young Benefactors Committee of the VH1 Save the Music Foundation, and it really is something I enjoy. I've always supported the idea of music education in a classroom because studies show that music power equals brain power. And that's their slogan, but it's true. And it could be anything. It's not necessarily just one type of music or playing percussion or a brass instrument. It really focuses on using that brain power. So I've always done an event every year to kind of highlight the work that they do and bring awareness to what the foundation does and the great things that are happening with that. And a couple of years ago, in 2018, I had an event here because the Grammys were held here in New York. And that year, Ice-T was nominated for a Grammy, as he was this year. And this year, he won. So congratulations to Ice-T and, of course, Mick Benzo, Jamil Flores, everybody that's part of Ice's crew and, of course, Body Count. And I found it interesting that the Grammys this year really has gone just a little bit further and further away from morality and closer to debauchery. And again, I'm not a priest. Listen, I can enjoy a little debauchery. I'm a human. But I do think that it was just this, what appeared to be women engaging in things that I probably shouldn't talk about. It just seemed a little over the top, like, and in poor taste. I think they were both talented and they could have displayed their talents a little better. Everybody knows I'm a big fan of Cardi B, yet I'm a big critic at the same time because of things like this. But I want you to hear a little bit of Cardi B's song, WAP, which I'm not going to get into, the WAP, but I want you to hear a little bit of that. And then I want you to hear about the intro that Bill Burr had. Bill Burr, who is a comedian that comes out to talk about the awards and present the Latino Awards, he got chastised a little bit for his remarks, but I want you to hear what he had to say. Check this out.
Okay, thank you, Janae. How are you? Was I the only one who wanted to kill himself during that piano solo? I bought a suit for this. I thought I was going to be on TV. I'm such a moron. I am losing so much money right now. All right. Shout out to all the rock stars that I wanted to meet tonight who are watching at home instead. I'm talking to you, Don Dokken. All right. What? I'm old. That was my first concert. All right. Here are the next categories.
He comes out. It seems to be he's a little abrasive. His humor reminds me of my colleague Sid Rosenberg. says a lot of similar types of things, and it, you know, I guess it's an acquired taste for some. I think, you know, Sid's funny, and I think his comments were funny to somebody because somebody was laughing besides him. Maybe the only other guy in the audience. But what's interesting is that Twitter's now trying to cancel Bill Burr for his feminist Grammys jokes. And he was the top trend on Twitter for a little bit because, you know, obviously his highly rated comedy specials, but mainly because of what he said as jokes. Now, these jokes were obviously getting him into trouble. Then he goes on to introduce a woman who's getting an award, who isn't there, and it was kind of awkward. And then he mispronounces her name, and it's like, all right, what are you going to do? Check this out.
Hey, Natalie, what? All right. and the winner, the Grammy goes to Natalia Lafourcade. Oh, wait. Dude, you... I will accept on behalf of her. If I butchered her name, I'm sorry. You know, Natalie, you won. Natalia...
I thought that was funny, too. I thought his recovery was good. I thought the whole thing was good, especially because, you know, he's got this, I don't know where he's from, but he sounds somehow like Northeastern, you know, and his accent is like, you know, it's funny to me. The whole thing is funny. He's like, Natalia, I don't know, you know, and he goes on. I want you to listen to this one now.
All right. Hey, how many feminists are like going nuts? So why is this cis white male doing all this Latino stuff? And the Grammy goes.
Now, that one was funny to me because obviously, you know, who uses these terms? Cis white male, number one. You know, the first time I heard that, which was not that long ago, because it's a relatively new thing in our lexicon, if you will. I was like, why are we using this word? Cisgender, cis male, cis whatever. And I had to look it up and I was like, that is so stupid that I have to use this word. But I found that to be funny. And funnier is, you know, the Latino stuff and him not mentioning the names right. I don't know. Maybe I'm putting you to sleep, maybe not. But I thought it was funny and it was worth mentioning. And to me, the overall story becomes how we kind of trend away from the things that matter with respect to morality. And kudos to him for taking shots at the feminists. There's a listener to the Mark Levin Show who's a fan of Mark's and a fan of mine for when I fill in for him that I bumped into in Orlando, Florida. Her name, Isabella Riley, and she followed me on one of the social media. I followed her back, and I watched one of her videos, and she labels herself an anti-feminist, and I thought it was terrific, some of the things she was saying. Not that she's an anti-feminist, because, you know, I actually consider myself a feminist, and her opinion is that male feminists are the worst. I'm a feminist in the sense that I do believe, you know, women can do what they want to do with their lives, and that's my definition and understanding of it. However, I know that others have, you know, different expansions of that definition, and that's fine. But I brought her up just really in the general sense of feminism and how some women attack the idea of feminism. They're like, you know, screw that. I don't need you to tell me what I can do and can't do. And that's honestly me with so many other things, especially when it comes to decision making, liberty, my own sovereignty as a human being. The last thing I need is Andrew Cuomo or Joel Barroso Biden or anybody else trying to make decisions on how I live, telling me, you know what, we don't want you to get the coronavirus, so you can't go to a restaurant. We don't want you to do this or we don't want you to do that. Yet, when it comes to situations where that could be potentially immoral or even dangerous or not within the thinking of common sense, even like allowing people that you do not know if they're infected with COVID or not during a pandemic to enter the United States while we had a lockdown, while everybody else who's supposed to be where they are, you know, people not that are sneaking into the country, but people that are just in the country because they're supposed to be in the country, we're locked down. But those people aren't locked down. They're kept safe. Now, it's true that there's a whole border crisis going on. And I think they're finally admitting that the Biden border crisis is a real thing. I don't know. You tell me. What are we going to do? Is it moral to allow these people in? Their argument that it's moral that we have to let them in, because otherwise we'd be sending unaccompanied children back to wherever they came from by themselves. Now, I know it's easy and it's crass to say, well, listen, nobody told them to come. It's not our problem. They're not kids from America. Send them back. But that really is an amoral, or at least immoral, response. I mean, there's some responsibility if you are the United States to do something. It doesn't mean we have to let them into the United States. But I mean, something has to be done, and clearly nothing's being done. So we're going to chop that up a little bit. There's a bunch of new information on this from a recent trip that Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy took down to the southern border. And the scrutiny on the administration is heightened each day. More and more people, including the left-wing reporters, even the fake news media, is like, hey, we can't be fake news long enough. We need to know what's happening. And all of it matters. All of it matters, whether it's the attacks on Trump, the fake news, the attacks on morality at the Grammys, the criticism on the Republican Party never stepping up and always playing defense. They're always going to play defense until you start playing offense, until we the people start playing offense. Because the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Lord Acton, Sir Edmund Burke. If we stand for nothing, we'll fall for anything. Hamilton. I leave you with those thoughts on a regular basis, and I mean them. And each time becomes more important than the last. We're seeing so many things erode in our republic, but there's hope. And the hope truly lies within those three large words at the top of our Constitution. We, the people. Until next time, America. Hasta la próxima. I am Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.